We've got an amazing couple hours ahead for you with Sonia Broz as we talk about her work, The Curse of El Diablo. Now, El Diablo, of course, means the devil. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about Sonia Broz. Sonia is a Maronite Catholic, charismatic, a visionary and spiritual warrior that called 44 years to the service of God in the field of exorcisms and deliverance. And with more than 40 years of training, acquired knowledge in metaphysics, witchcraft, magic, sorcery, and all the cultures and religions of the world as well. And here Sonia is with her work, The Curse of El Diablo. Hi, Sonia. Welcome to the program.
Well, hi, George. Thanks for having me on.
I'm looking forward to this. Scary title, though, The Curse of El Diablo. The devil, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Maronite Catholic. Would that make you Lebanese?
No, I am not Lebanese. But the Maronite Church moved over to the United States, began to open churches over here. And one of the first churches was in Lewisville, Texas, where I was living at the time. And I went to Mass there, and it was said in Syriac Aramaic. And I just felt the incredible power in the Mass, and I joined the church.
Great. Now tell me a little bit about how you got involved into this metaphysical end of this.
Well, that was, I really began as a baby. When I was born, I had when I was 2 years old, I knew God was there. I just saw a light up against the wall in my mother's bedroom, and I was in my crib, and I just knew it was God, and I relaxed, and I went to sleep. After that, I just began knowing, as I grew up, I would just know things, even as a small child. And they were always things that were uplifting and spiritual. It wasn't like a psychic type of knowing. It was just when it was needed, and it was for people that needed God to help them, whether they were ill or someone was passing or someone passed. I didn't understand what I was doing, and sometimes my mother was rather shocked, when I would just come up to people and say things, at 3 and 4 and whatnot. But it does run in our family, so it just hadn't... I guess it just hadn't surfaced for a while because my family had become Lutheran over the years as they migrated north in Europe. But when I got older, I asked my uncle, and he said, yes, it runs in the family. We've always served the church all the way back that they can trace. So that was just it. I was just born to it.
It sounds like you have been surrounded by goodness instead of any evil at all.
Yes, I think I was born to a very wonderful family, they were very strong in their faith, for many many years, everything was very cheerful and bright and all this, and then. As I began to get older, I began to be attacked I think the devil just didn't want me doing what I do.
And probably knew what you were going to do, right?
Well, I don't know. They say the devil doesn't know the future, but maybe he saw the potential. I don't know, but he sure came after me after that. Yeah.
Now, you call yourself a charismatic. Explain that for a lot of people who don't know what that means.
It just simply means someone who gets their information directly from God. It's not I don't hear voices and I don't, it's not from my mind. It's actually, it's more of a knowing, but it also is the Holy Spirit. There's an anointing sort of feeling. It's just kind of joy and love in this warmth and goodness that comes through me and then just flows outward to people. I have to set myself aside into God, into the heart of Christ, and then the information just flows through me. So it's not channeling because I know exactly what I'm saying, but it's just always uplifting. It's always spiritual in nature. It always has to do with God and the Holy Spirit and Jesus Christ. And, you know, so that's really the feeling. I just know all the time that it's God. And I also know if something else tries to break through, and I just ask God to bind it up, and it, you know, it just backs off.
What would you say, Sonia, is your mission?
To free people, George. You know, I'm not a preacher, and I'm not a priest. My whole mission, really, my whole calling, is to free up individuals so that they can make their own choices. So I see what is demonically or other entities. I see what is binding them or holding them down, and tell the priest or, you know, give him a call and say, this is what I see. And sometimes he'll have another charismatic he also works with, and he'll call them and they'll confirm and tell him what they see, and they'll confirm what I just said. So it's not something that they just take for granted when I make a call. You have to really be proven to be right 100%, because if you're not right 100%, it's not God. So, but everything I do is about freeing up people, just loosening the bonds that are holding them back from becoming who they really are and making their own choices going forward.
So you're convinced, as I am, that evil really does exist, aren't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The Curse of El Diablo. Tell me about the title of that book.
That was the curse actually was the undoing of a Mexican brujo who was a very professional man. He was a professional doctor, a true MD, well-trained, highly trained, but he was also, from many years of study, he had become a brujo and a man of knowledge. He was exceptional in his ability to heal. And for many years, he was a brujo who pretty much accepted darkness and lightness as equal. So it was an uncommon to use Satan as well as things of a supernatural or godly level to affect healings and bring in the cures and things that he worked with when he worked with his patients. But at one point in time, he decided, after meeting the Tarahumara Indians, he decided that he wanted to give his life solely to God. And when that happened, his best friend, who is also a very powerful brujo, these really were considered two of the most powerful brujos at that time.
And brujos would mean to a lot of people, too, sorcerer, right?
Yes, sorcerer, witch, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The other brujo, which was his best friend, was totally dedicated to the devil. So he was what they call a brujo blanc, negra. So he was more black magic. And Francisco was brujo Medico Blanco, which is white magic. And the second brujo became jealous because Francisco's cures began to become famous. And the cures lasted and they stayed and they were real and people felt wonderful. And the man began to really prosper. And so the devil in the second man began to attack Francisco and finally killed him. But the curses kept accelerating in strength and really began to control the entire family of Francisco. And his mask, he used to collect these masks. They were ritual, handmade masks that he collected from all over the world. And the mask that he had, that Francisco had, that controlled all of the other masks and all of the spirits that resided in these masks, was called El Diablo. So we had to come down and get all of these masks
Did they look like the devil?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Like the horns and all that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. They were, you know, they were the ritual dance masks or ceremonial dance masks, but these were all handmade from all over the world. And the El Diablo mask definitely did. It had the tusks and the horns, and it was a very bright, deep red. And it looked terrifying, really. It was.
Now, the people who were wearing these masks at these rituals and ceremonies, what were they trying to convey? Were they trying to cast out the devil by wearing the masks, or were they devil worshippers?
No, none of these masks. These masks were actually used in dance, in the folk dance in Mexico or around the world.
Like for fun?
Yeah, you know, Francisco was a world-class choreographer, and he had a Mexican dance troupe that he took all over the world.
Yeah, but I wouldn't think looking like the devil was some kind of a dance I'd want to attend.
Well, you know, it's their folk history, cultural history, and they wear masks to represent different aspects of their history when they're dancing. And, you know, it's like a play, but it's in a dance form and, you know, like a flamenco type of dancing and folk dancing that's common in Mexico. So the difference about these masks than your regular dance masks was that Francisco had, by ritual, entrapped spirits or the spirits of you know, of gods, of demons, of nature spirits, through ritual. So each one of these masks carried and held prisoner these spirits. So the masks were accumulated by Francisco for power, not just for dance. And the ones that were collected for power, no one wore while they were dancing. These were all kept and hung on the walls and things in his very, very large clinic down in Via Humasa.
So you don't think they were honoring the devil or trying to conjure him up?
At one time, yes. Before he turned his life over to God, yes, he worked equally with the devil as well.
He did.
Yes.
He did. This belief in the devil, did they pay homage to him?
Yes.
They did.
Well, yes. Yes. Yes, because the...
That's not a good thing, though.
Well, they don't see it as a bad thing. They see it as equal. In other words, you know, like just black and white, night and day, the devil and God, they see them as opposites, but in harmony.
But do they see the devil as evil?
Not really.
All right. Well, that's a big difference then.
Yeah. They see him as a necessary part of life.
But you must, because the title of the book is The Curse of El Diablo.
Well, yes, I grew up, realizing, knowing, and probably through my faith and the way that I believed, you know, I saw the devil really as the polar opposite of God, but anti-life. So for me, there really wasn't, there's never been a liking for the devil, you might say. I don't see the devil as being in harmony with life. I see him as extremely destructive. So that's my viewpoint.
Well, I think you're right.
Yes, I do too.
Yet there are a lot of people, Sonia, around this planet today that worship the devil. They're Luciferians, they're Satanists. Yeah. I mean, they want sculptures and statues of Satan and things like that all over the place.
Yes.
Why are they doing this? Are these bad people? Are these evil people?
Well, that depends on their intentions. But they're looking for power while they're alive on this earth. So they're looking for power in this world, which is why they look to Lucifer. For them, you know, Lucifer will, if they honor him, they do these different things. They believe that he will increase their wealth and their status in today's world. So for them, that's their choice. I personally see that God gives me and people of strong faith, that he gives us our wealth and our way of life, our health, and all of these things. But God doesn't really use the flash and dash, so to speak, that Lucifer uses. So some people find that attractive. And, you know, maybe they prayed for something at one point. They prayed a lot. Maybe they were very serious people of deep faith. And things just didn't happen the way they wanted them to or fast enough. So they turned to magic, and from magic they went to the Luciferian or satanic side of things, hoping for faster results here on Earth.
Let me ask you this, Sonia. If you are a practitioner of Satan, if you believe in the devil, if you worship the devil, are you going to, before your soul is, let's say, captured and taken away to hell, are you going to be able to accomplish incredible things? I mean, will they give you powers and things you wanted? I mean, it sounds like the, you know, the Dr. Faustus story. But, I mean, if you worship the devil, are you going to be rewarded for that until the last day?
Not necessarily, no. The, you know, the devil is very possessive of his power. So when, you know, people may experience, initial success and money and all of these things and notoriety, whatever that they're looking for. But as time goes on, the demons that work for the devil that bring in their gifts or their powers or whatever begin to demand more and more and more. And either they become what we call perfectly possessed, where they allow the demon to completely take over their body, or they begin to weaken as their life force begins to drain away. So they get to a certain point of possession, and then they have to make the choice whether or not they're going to completely give their soul over to Satan, or whether or not they're going to try to redeem themselves. And depending on that choice depends on their condition. But if they give themselves completely over to the devil and they become perfectly possessed, the demon actually takes over their body, and that although the person, the original person, may know what is happening and what is going on, they really don't have control over the demon. They literally have surrendered all control. So either way, in my opinion, they've pretty much lost the right to be who they are, to be an individual soul and make their own decisions. So this is where the crux of the problem comes in. Anything the devil gives you, he demands a very, very high price, whereas God gives freely with no strings attached.
And is that the mission? If you support the devil, eventually it's going to get your soul. Is that what it wants?
Well, I believe so, yes. Yes, and that's what it says in the Bible. But I've seen it. I've seen it in people. I've seen how it has gone, and I've spoken to many people who were on that brink of perfect possession.
All right, we're going to come back and talk more about the curse of El Diablo in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Sonia Bros. We'll take phone calls, maybe your devil experiences next hour. So if you had a choice, though, Sonia, between associating yourself with the devil or with godlike figures, which would that be? I think I know the answer.
Yes, that would be God for sure. Yes.
Hands down.
Yes, absolutely, without doubt.
When people are dabbling with the devil, that side of it, what motivates them to do it? It would seem to me that you could just as easily go to the God.
Well, I think that people go into magic and other types of things because they feel a lack of control over their personal circumstances.
Okay.
You know, they pray and ask for things, but they many times they don't really have a very strong faith, or they don't really understand the Bible or scripture, and they feel that they're not getting their answers or they're not getting what they ask for. So they begin to try to take control over their personal circumstances by going into magic or things that they feel they can control. That's really the lie right there. That's the trick, is that when people believe that they have control over their own circumstances by trying to manipulate the devil, they're really the ones being manipulated. So this is really a problem, because when they first begin, many times their magic will work, but that's a lure. It just lures them in deeper, and as they get deeper, they begin to lose their vitality, they begin to lose their personal energy, and they think they're acquiring power, but what they're really acquiring is the assistance of these demons, and the demons began to then control them. They began to keep them in a state of fear, as if they give up their magic, they're afraid they're going to lose everything they've gotten or that they've procured through magic. So they continue on to do this. They feel that if they want control. So they feel that if they go towards God, they need to give up all control over to God, which is actually true. And they don't want to do that. And many times as well, because of the way that the story of God has been changed over the years by, you know, different philosophies coming into play, they begin to doubt whether or not God really exists. And, of course, the devil's only too happy to back that up and to find new ways to explain to them that his concerns, and that is that God really isn't there, he's not really listening, he's an old man sitting on a throne somewhere, and they don't realize that God is real and vital and alive and moving all the time in their best interest. So once they accept this other type of control through magic and through their belief in Satan, they become more and more convinced that God is really not a living being, that he's an imagination thing, he's, you know, the God molecule of the brain or whatever, because they think that God exists just because they want him to exist. But the truth is that he really does exist, and he is much smarter, he's much more clever, and he is much more active in the world than the devil could possibly be. But they don't really see that. They get blinded as they get further and further under control of these entities. They cannot reason clearly. They can't think clearly anymore. They think they are, but they're really not, because the demons are constantly feeding them thoughts. And you can usually tell a demonic thought because it always begins with the word I, so that you think it's your own thought, but it's always a thought that is less charitable towards others, less loving towards others, less caring towards others, more about them personally, and they're acquiring of personal power. So this is, it's really a very insidious way of taking over the ability of the senses of that individual. So they can no longer hear you. You know, you can sit and talk to them and you can say whatever, and they don't really hear you. They hear what they want to hear, and that's all they hear, or they think they're thinking for themselves, but really all of these thoughts are just coming into their minds constantly, so that they really don't realize that they just aren't their own personal thoughts anymore as time goes on.
Sonia, when people come to you for assistance, for help, what are they normally looking for?
They're looking for the love. They're looking for the joy in life. They're looking to feel free. They begin to realize that they're being occluded, that their thinking has become untenable, or they're getting so out of sync with the normal or the just the joy of life, the embracing of life that they used to feel when before all this started, that they realize that their circumstances have become extremely difficult. They're having to do ritual after ritual after ritual to keep things in some sort of manner that they can live with. And they begin to realize that they are now a tool. They're now being used constantly. They become enslaved. And, you know, this is really what my calling is to free the slaves, because they become really enslaved into this whole thinking pattern and constant scrambling, trying to come up with a stronger spell or a stronger ritual or whatever to keep their footing, to stay where they are. And it begins to fall off and not work, and they get scared, they get frightened, and inside they turn and they want to run to God. So they come to me because by this time they've got curses, they've got rituals, they've got all these things that are binding them. And my whole life study has been how to undo these curses, how to undo these rituals, so that they can at some point become free of this controlling factor in their lives and once again be clear enough to make their free will choice.
Who puts these curses on them, Sonia?
Anybody. It can be anybody. It can be, you know, even when people a lot of times don't realize the power of their words. So even though they can read this in the Bible, they don't really realize it. You know, we're just human beings, and things happen. You get angry. You say things. You might wish something awful to happen to someone because you feel they've wronged you in some way or whatever. And depending on your intention and the power and force that your intention takes with the words, you can literally curse someone just by saying, you know, I hope you, whatever, some horrible thing. And at that point, that even that is a curse. But the really serious curses are ones where the practitioner uses a ritual procedure to inflict a curse. And the, you know, as human beings, we really don't have any personal power per se other than our own ability to do something. But when you do something through a ritual, you're calling on a power source. So if that ritual is for God's benefit, then you are calling on God as your power source. If it's for your own personal benefit as far as thinking or using or thinking you have your own personal power, then you begin to draw that power source from other entities or other gods or Satan himself.
Have you performed or been a part of an exorcism?
Yes.
In what capacity?
When I was very young, I was in my early 20s, and I grew up a Lutheran, we have no real teaching, and certainly didn't at that time, about Satanism and about how to perform an exorcism or anything else. We just simply believed in an apostolic factor that anyone, any true believer, could exorcise demons and that sort of thing. So my best friend, my roommate, got under a spell that she attended a party. She fell for this guy, and this guy performed a ritual over her. And she came back, and I noticed immediately that there was something wrong with her. I noticed that
Huh.
she began to get really dark.
Oh, boy.
And so when I tried to, I mean, she got to the point where she would not come out of her room.
Could you see it or sense it or both?
Both, yes. The vitality went out of her body. She got very pale. She lost a lot of weight. Her hair looked lackluster. She had no vitality anywhere in her. And she began to stay in her room all the time. She wouldn't come out. She would wait until I was either, you know, in another room, or I was gone, or I was in my bedroom sleeping, to come out. So she was like lurking about the home when I was actually not present. And she would sneak out of her room and go to the kitchen and, you know, get a drink or something to drink and some small amount of something to eat. But even that began to come to a halt as she got further and further possessed. And finally, one day, I just broke the door down. I was so concerned. I was so worried about
mm-hmm,
her.
Of course.
I didn't know what to do. And I just literally, you know, demanded that she open the door, and she wouldn't open it. So I just literally kicked the door in. And she reacted extremely violently. And I had never seen this at this
point. Did she attack you?
Excuse me? Yes, she did. Yes. Yeah, she came at me, you know, with her fingernails, her hands out like claws.
Oh, my God.
Her face was, she was snarling. She looked animalistic. I saw her eyes roll up in her head repeatedly. It scared me half out of my mind, George. I was scared to death.
How did you get around this? How did you solve this dilemma?
Well, she chased me into the kitchen, and she grabbed one of the knives out
of
the...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, and she... grabbed one of the knives. Now, this is the nicest, sweetest person in the world, George. She really was. And when she came out of that room, I did not know her. I didn't know who or what she was. She ran into the kitchen. She grabbed a knife out of the knife holder, and she came at me with it. And I had been trained in martial arts since I was quite young.
Good.
And I knocked the knife out of her hand.
She could have killed you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, she certainly, you know, she certainly intended to. I mean, the demon in her did. And I managed to knock the knife out of her hand without damaging her. But then she began to struggle with me, and I threw her away from me, and she landed against this wall. I mean, she just stepped backwards,
yeah,
you know, and hit the wall. And then she just slid down and began to just blaspheme, just began to just attack with...
vulgar, everything. Huh?
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. And at this point, I just literally began praying out loud. I began asking, you know, Jesus to remove the spirit. And the more I tried to pray, the more I tried to ask God to come to help me, the worse this thing got. And I saw that she was going to get back up and come at me. And at this point, the power exuding from her was so evil and so violent and so overpowering, it literally scared me so badly that I was plastered against the couch. I was terrified. And I just reached up my hand and I called for St. Michael. I just didn't know what to do. And I just kind of felt this sword, so to speak, the hilt of a sword in my hand. And at the same time, I felt this incredible power of God just come into the room, and I couldn't see it. I've never been able to see spirits with my eyes, but I felt this incredible power come into the room. And as St. Michael came into the room, the look on her face changed incredibly. Her face went back to normal. It looked like a incredibly scared, frightened person. Her eyes got very big. She started screaming and wailing. And, you know, she just, she shrunk back into the corner of the room and, you know, began, you know, tears were coming out. The screams got louder. And at this point, really, I thought I was going to pass out. I was so terrified.
Oh my God, you must have been mentally exhausted too.
Oh yeah, I was absolutely beyond, just beyond myself. And as the power tended, it started to move towards her, as St. Michael began to move towards her, this demon suddenly decided it had better things to do, and it just took off out the window. She was close to this open window, and it flew out of the window, and she collapsed, and when she sat back up, she was herself. But the interesting thing is that my husband now, we've been together 36 years, at that time he was driving over the road, he was a truck driver, and it jumped on him he was sound asleep in his truck in Montana, and we were in North Dakota, and he was sound asleep in a truck stop, and this thing landed on him and tried to stop him from breathing and everything else, and he managed to throw it off, or what he thought he was doing. Anyway, he got jumped out of the truck and ran into the truck stop and called me. So 5 minutes after she turned back to normal, but she was very limp and not able to really speak, the phone rang, and I literally jumped out of my skin, answered the phone, and Jim said, "What are you doing over there? I know you're doing something because this horrible thing just jumped on me in the truck, tried to kill me." And you know,
it's after him too, huh?
Well, it went after him to get back at me, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, I prayed with him over the phone, and he was okay. And then she finally became more conscious, and I was able to talk to her. I called a friend of mine for help.
You saved her life.
Well, God did, yes. You know, I personally was a limp noodle.
Jeez.
You know, I was just, I think I shook for 2 hours.
Sonia, give out your website, would you?
Yes, it's getridofghosts.com.
That's easy enough, and we've got a link for you at coasttocoastam.com. And the book, The Curse of El Diablo, is available where?
It's on, there's a link to my website to Glanet & Ty, my publisher, and also you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, great books, just about everywhere.
All right, great. We're going to come back in a moment, final hour to go with you, and we're going to not only take phone calls and questions, but if you want to share your experience, your devilish experience or demons, love to hear it next.